Okay. Well, hello there, Rachel.
Hello, Brandon.
Welcome to the CPC Together podcast, where we do everything together.
Because life together is better.
Yeah, better together. Better together, you and me. You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area. I have a question for you. It's the question that Kevin asked at the very beginning of the sermon. When is the last time that you experienced sheer silence?
Probably last week in Tahoe. I went out on the patio towards, like, it was later night, and I couldn't hear anything. Just
not even a loon.
Not sheer silence. I guess it was like a little lap at the lake.
What about crickets?
They don't have those in Tahoe.
What?
They probably do. I didn't hear any though.
Were you paying attention to the silence? Were you like, wow, I don't hear anything?
Not at first. I think I was paying attention to the moon because it looked cool, but probably Tahoe.
I went to a studio like to record something.
Oh.
And it was actually a trip that I went. I went up to Vancouver a couple years ago. I think this is the last time I experienced sheer silence. And it was an interior room, so there's no windows. And it was all, studio, like the walls are super thick. They have certain kind of drywall so that you don't pass noise. And I, not only did I record in the vocal room, but that's like where I was staying too. So like there was a little futon that turned into a bed. And so he's like, yeah, this is where you're going to sleep. I'm like, oh. I guess I'm sleeping in this studio. And at night, I mean, in the day it was quiet because it has to be quiet to isolate sound. But at night it was like, it was deafening silence.
Oh man.
Like I feel like I could hear my own heartbeat. Like I was just in, like, I would have to go like out into the big room and like play piano and stuff because it was so uncomfortably quiet.
Oh gosh. Was it kind of like noise canceling headphones quiet?
Yeah. Where it kind of does that suck in your ears where it's like,
yeah.
And you're like, have you ever heard of those? I really want to try this, but I'm a little scared. The deprivation chambers.
No.
Have you heard about them?
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So it's like a big old egg and it's big enough for like a human. And you go in there, and I don't know everything about it. Probably someone who's listening knows way more about this. But there, you sit in water, and the water, eventually, they match it perfectly to your body temperature. And they essentially try to deprive you of your senses. So you can't see anything. It's like pitch black.
Ooh.
You can't hear anything. You can't feel anything. That's the big one, is you can't feel anything. I don't know if you could smell anything. I imagine the water has a smell.
Maybe they have you shower.
Like even then you're smelling shampoo. Like finesse shampoo. That takes finesse. Do you remember finesse shampoo? Probably not.
I do.
Does it still exist?
It does. New packaging.
Do you like it?
I used to. I feel like it started to make me start to bald. So maybe this is false advertising.
Softness, but that's easy. Softness and balding, that takes finesse.
But why do people go in deprivation chambers?
It makes your brain like freak out. And apparently you have big revelations in the deprivation chamber. I don't know. Oh. I'm telling you, there's someone listening who has done this or at least knows about it, and I'm very interested. I want to try it. I think it would be really cool. Like you go in there and you're like, I understand life now. But, you know, maybe that's like part of the journey. What more of an Oremos could you have than a deprivation trainer? a deprivation trainer. What did I say?
Chamber?
Chamber. Thank you.
I just imagine someone trying to advertise for this stuff. Feel nothing. See nothing.
Yeah.
Taste nothing. Be deprived.
sign me up. deprivation. Yeah. but he talked about like this, the exact opposite, the culture that we live in is like, is what would be the opposite of a deprivation chamber?
Like being overstimulated.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we live, he called it noise. And I was thinking about when he was talking about how we live in this like super noisy culture, which is pretty true. Like what you experienced in Tahoe or me in the studio is kind of rare. Like you don't get those moments. You really do have to kind of retreat. And I think we saw that in Jesus. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but, he used that, that example that like, you know, when they sort of started recording human history in like 5,000 BC or something, and largely, you know, change was pretty much stable, like maybe a little bit of an uptick of technology, you know. Oh, hey, here we invented the wheel, you know, we invented the printing press and all that kind of stuff. But like, I guess somewhere around 1980, like things just went like on a super upslope, and we've been, which we can tell, like, I feel like, especially, I don't know, like what is there anything that like 9-year-old Rachel would, your mind would be blown by existing now? Does that make sense?
Like something that I would just not be able to fathom.
Yeah. Because I'm straddling like a technological advancement, like of the smartphone. Like that's how I am. I am that age when I remember getting my first phone, and it was not smart. And I don't think the iPhone was out yet.
Yeah.
And it was like this little flip phone, and I couldn't fathom what was to come. It blew my mind when I would think about being able to go check your email on your phone.
Yeah.
Which sounds so ridiculous now, because that's all, that's the only place anyone ever checks their email.
Yeah.
But like the other day, you know, we have this, lock system at our church, and you can, if you have an Apple Watch, you can say, "Hey Siri, open the front door," you know, or "open next key" or something like that. And then you just with your watch open the door, and it's like, okay, access granted. It doesn't actually say access granted, but you, I would have flipped out when I was a little kid if you would have told me that my watch, I was also obsessed with watches. I had like so many watches, but if you would have told me that I could open a door with my watch, oh my gosh, like, and that's just, you know, 20 years ago or something.
Yeah. I thought the neon backlight on watches was cool. You like push a button and it lights up.
Yes.
But even the like iPad copy and paste thing where it copies to another device or paste it in there.
Dude.
I still feel like 9-year-old Rachel. I freak out all the time.
There's an Apple person that needs to know this. Okay. So for those of you that have an iPhone and some kind of Apple computer.
Newer than the iPhone 6.
No, it doesn't work with your old one?
Hypothetically. Yeah.
So you can copy something on one of the devices. So let's say you're on your computer, and this happens all the time with me with Zoom links, because if someone texts me a Zoom link, I can't, if I don't want to go on the Zoom on my phone, I have to move it to my computer. So let's say someone texts me a Zoom link on my phone, I copy it, and then I can go to my computer and paste it. That should blow your mind, listener. If you don't know this yet, try it and it will change it. Copy on one device, paste on another, and your life will be changed. But the point is, we're still accelerating at a magnitude of light speed. Like, it's insane. I just read an article that they have figured out. There's like, they got a small cluster of brain cells, which is like, I don't know, maybe like 20,000 brain cells.
Oh, that's a big cluster.
I don't think it is. I think we have like gajillions of brain cells, don't we? I don't know.
I don't know. Must be more for some.
Anyway, they got this cluster of brain cells to learn how to play Pong. Like the game that like has just two, like, it's like an old Atari game that just has two paddles that move on either side of the screen. And you can move the paddle up or down just on a y-axis.
Oh.
You can't move it that way, like okay. on x-axis.
Yeah.
And you just move it up and down. And this, they hooked like electrodes up to it.
Yeah.
And the brain learned how to play Pong. You can see, there's a video of it. Of it being like, when the ball goes down to the bottom corner, bottom right corner, the little paddle just kind of shakes for a second and then moves down.
Oh.
It's whoa. Like, what? Like, and they're like, yeah, this is one of our first advancements of like mixing artificial intelligence with like human matter.
Oh my gosh.
Physical matter. Like, what? Where the heck are we going to be in 20 years? Like,
wow.
It is insane the rate of growth that we're going. But all that leads to an incredible amount of noise.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, I don't know what you think about this, but like, do you feel like there's like a comfort in the noise? Like, what does the noise do for us?
Mm.
Do you ever find that? Like that there's some kind of, I mean, certainly when we think about white noise, you know, some people need it to like go to sleep.
Yeah.
So, but like, what do you think about that?
Our community group was just talking about this because I didn't realize how many different colors of noise there are. There's like white noise. I've heard pink noise is the best.
Pink noise is all the frequencies.
Oh.
They use it to tune rooms.
Oh.
And it sounds, it's when snow used to be on TV, you know, when it really, you'd turn on and it would be a shh.
Oh, yeah.
You probably don't remember that, but I don't think it was ever a thing for you, but TVs used to do that.
Yeah.
That's pink noise.
Okay. Yeah. But we were talking about how even when we want quiet, in some ways, like those things can be helpful if you're out in public, like on the BART or something, and you put on pink noise or brown noise or white noise or all the noises.
What's brown noise?
Daniel said it has more bass tones.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I don't know. I have to try it out. But yeah, I feel like we've gotten to a point where some amount of noise feels more normal than no noise at all. So yeah. We try to like pick what noise feels the most comfortable, which silence isn't really one of those options, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because we don't hear sheer silence or we just don't feel comfortable with it. I don't know.
Yeah. Silence is the absence of noise, kind of like black is the absence of light, color.
I think so, right? It doesn't.
Like no color is black, no sound is silence.
Yeah.
Interesting. But, you know, then he used that picture that he's been using a couple of weeks where there was like, you know, there's a cross and then the one on the image on the left is like this super scribbly, chaotic, noisy sort of image. And God is in there. And like, we try to fit him in to the chaos. We try to like, how do we get God in the midst of the noise? And maybe I can, but then there's the picture on the right. That's like kind of a clean circle where Jesus is at the center and we orient our lives around him.
Yeah.
He's like the first building block. And then the rest of it goes around him. I'm just curious, like, and Rachel, I can tell you, I feel like I see this in you, but I'm wondering, like, I feel like when you, as an example of this, when you relate to people, it feels really intentional to me. Like, it feels like, and tell me if I'm wrong, I don't know, like, it feels like that's something that maybe you wouldn't naturally, like, just out of the box, out of the Rachel box, do. But something that maybe God, it's a way that you have sort of reoriented the way that you do relationships. Am I right? Like, can you give us an example of how that does that or?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like something that stood out from that diagram was even with the squiggly lines, it's not that you don't bump into Jesus or like the things of God, but it's definitely less intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of similarly, like the way that I feel like it is God working in a lot of relationships, but the way that I do intersect with people, I could bump into people if I just kind of passively went through my day. I would still find joy in meeting up with people, but it would be less intentional than if I set aside times or kind of rearrange certain parts of the day in order to be more present with people or pray through, kind of like what Kevin said before meetings, like, God, I'm here and you're here, or kind of giving those meetings to him. Because naturally, I think when I meet with people, I am excited to see them,
yeah.
but I might not be in the right headspace to really be present with them.
Yeah.
So for me, I have to intentionally make time or create space where I know I'll be able to be with people. And it's not always easy, I think, like even rhythms of connecting with family or friends. There's other things that I want to do. Not that I don't want to connect with family and totally. Friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's just the timing of it, where if I don't make those rhythms or create space for them, then they won't happen as naturally, I think.
Yeah, I think it's, I was thinking about this, like, it's a lot like when I come home and I'm tired and all I want to do is just shut my brain off. And my, you know, 8-year-old Charlie comes in and says, Dad, will you color with me? And like, so there lies the intentionality part. Like, if I'm not being intentional about what I really want, which is to be a good father to Charlie, if I just pay attention to what my most pressing need currently is, yeah. which is I just want to not have my brain working.
Yeah.
Then I will opt to say, Charlie, I'll do that later. I want to sit down and watch TV for a while.
Hmm.
Which sometimes I do, to be honest.
Yeah.
But the intentionality is, you know what? Like, I know that this is what I really want. I know that when I go to sleep tonight, I'm not going to wish that I watch TV instead of hanging out with Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the intentionality that I see on you. Like, you will reach out and encourage me or whatever, because it's something that you are, it's Jesus in you.
Hmm.
And I feel like that is you, like you said, rearranging your schedule, rearranging what things you might want to do in order to make sure that you're present for the relationships that God's put in your life. And I just think it's a really practical thing that I feel like it's a great example of how we do that. You know, sometimes it can feel a little bit like, how do I start? What do I start with? How do I start orienting my life around God?
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like you just pick something important and be intentional about it.
Yeah. I was talking to a mom in the courtyard. We were talking about her daughter who went to college recently and has been trying to pick between so many different things of like, I want to go hang out with these friends, but I want to go to this open mic night. But if I go with these friends, then I'll miss out on this, or different opportunities that she has. And her mom brought back the illustration of the jar that you fill with rocks and sand and dirt. And there was so much more that the professor was able to fill the jar with. And he asked the students, what's the point of this?
Yeah.
And then the students were like, oh, well, the point of this is that you can fit something in even when you think it's full.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, like, look where the big rocks are in the jar. They're on the bottom. And he was like, those are the most important things, because if you put the big rocks on top after filling everything in, there might not be room for them. So in some ways it's like, does our jar reflect like what the big rocks are, and how do we kind of like put the big rocks in first and then fill the other things around, versus like trying to cram it all in without any particular order.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's like the best advice a mom could give, but
that's
good.
Really good. Kevin shared a Susan Muto quote. Is that how you say it? Muto?
Yeah, I think so.
You're really confident with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that is definitely it.
Sorry, Susan.
In a noise polluted world, it is even difficult to hear ourselves think, let alone try to be still and know God. It is even difficult to hear ourselves think. I feel that.
Yeah.
I really feel that. I mean, I've been trying, I have this like song on my brain, and it takes, I have to think about when I write a song, I have to like sit down and like, it's kind of like a puzzle. I know there's words and I know there's a rhyme scheme for it, but it really does take me sitting down. And I have been shocked by how distracted my last 2 or 3 days have been. So distracted that like the only time I can think about it is when I'm in the car. Like just to sit down and think, there's just too much that's demanding.
Yeah.
anyway, the quote continues, let alone, we can't think, let alone try to be still and know God. Yet it seems essential for our spiritual life to seek some silence, no matter how busy we may be. Silence is not to be shunned as empty space, but to be befriended as fertile ground for intimacy with God. So that's, we consider so this pace and margin thing, trying to manage our pace and margin with silence and solitude. What did it look like for Jesus? How did Jesus, as you see it, Rachel, fit silence and solitude into his life?
I feel like it would have had to be, going back to that jar illustration, it would have had to be one of the big rocks, because he kept going back to it. And I feel like he did it without at least seeming to be guilty about it. Like, even when his disciples came up and were like, Jesus, where were you? There were people who need you, people waiting for you. He wasn't like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, what was I thinking? I shouldn't have taken time to be with God. No, and he even invited them into that time too. So I feel like it must have been a big rock for him.
Yeah. I look at two as the, for the scripture verse that that Kevin read, there's two things that sort of jumped out at me. And that is, one, he was led by the Spirit into the wilderness. I guess the second thing is into the wilderness. And one, like, to be able to be led by the Spirit, I don't know. I just feel like sometimes that is such a, we say it all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what does it look like to be, like, how do we orient our lives to be led by the Spirit? Do you practice this? Is this something that you try to work on, like trying to be led by the Spirit? And do you have anything like worth sharing that as an example of what it means to be led by the Spirit? Because sometimes that can just be like this sort of lofty thing, you know, that is difficult to embrace.
Yeah. I feel like, kind of going back to the idea of like relationships and intentionality with people, I think sometimes it means, if I'm going to be led by the Spirit, that means I can't be led by my own agenda. And I can have an idea, especially as an introvert, of like, okay, this is what I'm going to talk about. Or I don't plan out the whole conversation, but more just like for my own, whether it's anxiety or just wanting to really make the most of the time with the person, I'll think through, okay, like, what do I want to ask, or what do I want to know? What do I want to share? But sometimes it's even just leaving space a little more for like listening, or allowing more of those awkward pauses or whatever would naturally come up, because I feel like God can work in more ways than I imagine. And sometimes even through that nervousness. So usually if I go in with a certain agenda or like try to fill the space with talking, then I'm not as attentive to maybe observing what God might be leading me to observe about a person. If like, hey, did you notice they were like pretty down, or did you notice this expression or this reaction, or why didn't you just ask them how they were doing, like at the start, instead of kind of trying to lead that time. So I think with relationships, I've experienced that a little bit more, but I still need to let go of some control.
I mean, when do we ever stop fighting that battle, that tension of just letting go? Yeah, I feel like what I hear you saying, and I resonate with it, is the, like, it's sort of a submitting whatever you're doing to what God might want to do with it. Like, it's almost more of a posture. You know, I think sometimes when you hear being led by the Spirit, you imagine, I do this with my girls sometimes, where I'll be like, okay, Charlie, I'm going to close my eyes, and I'm, you know, walking down the sidewalk, I'll be like, you steer me, and I'll just let her steer me. And she always like steers me into a car or something. But like, I think we picture that, you know, we completely shut our eyes and just, okay, God, you know, man, I really hope you speak, because I'm about to walk off a cliff.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, what you just said, and how I resonate with it too, is there is a posture of like kind of open handedness, where you're saying, God, like, you have me on this path, you've put me here, and I want to submit this conversation or this relationship or whatever I'm about to do to you. Mm. And sometimes just kind of reassessing that, realigning that at the beginning of something that you're going to do is enough to let God lead you in that whole thing.
Yeah.
One of the ways I do this is when I am, you know, I plan the worship set and plan the services here, and when it never ceases to amaze me that when I stop during the week or maybe even on Sunday morning and pray, God, what do you want to do with your people? What do your people need? Like, give me eyes to see what you see in this room. Like, how do you want us? What's the best way for us to worship you this morning? And if in it, I mean, it's unbelievable how hard that is for me to remember to do that on a regular basis. But when I do, it's a worship set that's far more submitted to God. And then it's just crazy, like, what God reveals to me. But we're so noisy and we need to interject our voice, and we have a job to do, right? I got to plan the service. So here we go. And all kinds of things that need to happen. And if we're not careful, we just kind of, we're too noisy to hear from God.
Yeah.
So I think what you said is so great. And that is being led by the Spirit, I think, looks a lot like that. And I think the more you do it, the more you trust that God is going to lead you.
Yeah.
But the other big thing, I think, is that he's led into the wilderness. We've talked about this before, the Eremos. And I was thinking about this whole thing about, Kevin keeps saying, I think he said like two or three times, that the Eremos is God, is Jesus's favorite place. And I think I want to, I'm not disagreeing with Kevin. I would never do that ever, because Kevin is perfect. But I do kind of want to reframe it a little bit, only because I think you could also add, it's the most necessary place for him to go. Like you said, if you're going to keep the big rock in the jar first, you have to make sure that you make time to go.
Yeah.
To make sure the big rock is always in the jar first. And I feel like if all we do is describe it as Jesus's favorite place, we were talking a little bit before this about like the analogy of running.
Yeah.
And how discouraging it is for a non-runner who has aspirations of getting in shape, for a runner to be like, man, I just love running. I just love the high I get from running. I just love going out there and, you know, sweating and, you know, like, you imagine that as a non-runner, as someone who's out of shape, and you're like, that sounds like the most horrible thing ever.
Yeah.
And it could be discouraging to run. And I think I bring that up only to say, I think Kevin is right. I think it probably was Jesus's favorite place.
Yeah.
But to the extent that we're aligned, or to extent that we're not aligned with Jesus, is the extent that I think it's going to be uncomfortable to try to realign ourselves. So when we do achieve silence, I don't want to do anyone a disservice and make them feel like as soon as they experience silence, they're going to have this amazing, comfortable, favorite place. You know, it's like, I'd rather go there than Disneyland. Because I think that when we first start this journey, and I've experienced this, and I know a lot of other people as we've started this have experienced this too. When you start it, you're addressing things that you haven't addressed for a long time. You feel vulnerable. You feel super distracted. You could probably feel lonely. You might feel tired. Like, there's so many things that might be uncomfortable, and it may not be your favorite place initially. But ideally, the longer you're there and the more you start aligning your desires with God's desires, the more you start seeing, this is absolutely essential for my survival as a Christian, to stay connected to the power and the faith that I get when I commune with God. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
No, that's so good. Cause it's kind of like, you even think of, like, my mom goes to Safeway every couple days, like, for groceries. And people might say, oh, because she's there a lot. Like, oh, Safeway's her favorite place. But if you ask her, she's like, oh, I hate going to the grocery store. But she also likes feeding our family. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, this is necessary for our families, like, meals, for our times together. And I think there's something about vitality, like Kevin mentioned, like vitality in Jesus's relationship with the Father and like that connection. And these are touch points where I think of even like conversations, every conversation you might not walk away thinking, oh, that was my favorite conversation, but there was a level of connection that happened there.
Yeah.
And I think because it was a consistent rhythm, it wasn't just for like for the sake of it or just because being in the desert was like the most enjoyable thing, but I think it was that connection.
Yeah.
And that vitality with the Father that I think made that a Ramos. Maybe that's why Kevin said like his favorite place.
Yeah. Like that Holy Spirit song that we sing, and it, the verse starts with, there's nothing worth more.
Yeah.
You know, nothing could ever compare. And it's like, once you do encounter the living God, it is unlike any other thing that the world can offer. Mm. I mean, it does, our white noise pales in comparison to the voice, the life-giving, powerful voice of the living God. I mean, there's just nothing that compares to it. So yeah, it does become like a major essential. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on he was kind of drawing a comparison between rest and leisure. How is it different? Because, you know, we can think of silence and solitude as, oh yeah, I'm going to go, you know, sleep in the hammock, or I'm going to go. It's not come watch TV or, you know, come binge that Netflix, which is a lot of times how we choose to sort of what you said earlier before we were recording, that we use to numb our brain. But there's not really a numbing in the rest. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about rest is that, yeah, it's not necessarily numbing. There's still an activeness to it, but you're actively resting. And I love what Kevin said. He said it's not that Netflix or pool time or whatever the thing is. It's not that those things are bad, but it's just more like consider the things that give your soul rest. And I think at the end of the night, I sometimes like just like to put the TV on and I'm like, oh, this is what I need to rest, to introvert, whatever words I use to kind of justify it. It's not a bad thing. But when I get ready for bed, I'm like, ah, I don't feel like I accomplished what I set out to do by watching TV. And I think that's because the TV time felt so like numbing or passive.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's almost like giving ourselves an opportunity, kind of what you were talking about earlier, to like hear our own thoughts, and even more than hearing our own thoughts, just to kind of sit with what's with what's true, like between us and God. Just like you kind of would with someone you're super comfortable with, like you'd sit on the couch and be with them and just like take a minute just to like be on the couch. And you're still actively aware that you're with that person.
Yeah.
And they see you the way you are, whether you're like super crabby or calm or silly or whatever it is, but you just take a moment to just be with them and rest with them without, I don't know, necessarily needing to produce anything
fill the silence or
ignore them, but you're actively resting with them.
I think that also, it makes me also kind of think of, how sometimes we can conflate silence and solitude with mindfulness. I'm trying to think, do you have that, the quote that he shared, the Rich Velotis quote that talks about the difference between mindfulness, because mindfulness is something that's really big in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference according? Maybe you could just read that quote.
Yeah. He said the object of mindfulness is better psychological and physical health, but the object of silence is communion with God. It's about disconnecting from noise and distraction to commune with God. It's communion with a person.
Yeah. God. Communion with a person is the big difference. Right?
Yeah.
Mindfulness ends with ourselves.
Yeah.
It doesn't put God in the equation.
Yeah.
At all.
Which we do need good psychological and physical health.
Yeah.
But what we need most is that communion with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been thinking about this whole idea of rest and silence and solitude and trying to figure out, And I feel like all of us kind of have little, if you're paying attention, you kind of have little triggers when you know that it's, you need or, like a refreshing or a revitalization. Mm. And I don't know that you could ever get too much or enough God. So probably you could spend a ton of time with God and never get enough. But I have just been feeling, you know, like he used this example of, well, he just talked about recognizing the weariness of our souls.
Mm.
And sometimes we're almost too busy to recognize the weariness, but I've been talking to so many friends and, even some family members that have kind of walked away from God.
Hmm.
And as I'm engaging God more and more seriously and really, really being intentional about my relationship and intimacy, getting to know and diving deeper into my relationship with God, I'm engaging these conversations pretty head on. Like I want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Like when they talk to me about it, I ask questions that I might not normally ask because I don't necessarily know I want to go there with them.
Hmm.
I don't want to get into some theological debate or historical debate or scientific, you know, it's not really about that. But, I had a friend last week that, you know, was pretty public on Facebook, just announcing that his life is better without faith.
Hmm.
And I called him and just was like, hey, like, I just want to hear about this. Like, I'd love to just hear more about what you're talking about. And I just, for whatever reason, God's bringing these conversations into my life over and over and over again in these last few weeks. And I feel the weariness and I can feel that I need to go to him with it. Like I need to bring all of this stuff that I've been collecting and in some ways kind of wearing and absorbing from people and say, God, what do I do with this?
Hmm.
You know, well, what does this mean for me? Is there anything that you want me to speak into these situations or whatever it is? But I can feel it sort of weighing me down and I need to go offload it.
Hmm.
And so I scheduled like a time and there's a friend here from CPC that has a place and it's this like desolate cabin in the middle of nowhere and it has no cell service and I'm actually a little bit terrified because I haven't tried. I'm going to try to go there for like 3 days and I'm so back to back with things. I can't imagine what it's going to be like. Like I'm kind of imagining like when Kevin just keeps, it's Jesus's favorite place. Like I'm just imagining like, is this going to be my favorite place or is it going to really be hard? But I will report back and let you know how it goes because I am recognizing the weariness of my soul in this situation. And if we're ministering and we're out there and we're relating, we're going to experience that weariness. You know, we're going to encounter, I mean, we encounter it without even being in relationship if we're paying attention to the news and all that kind of stuff. But certainly if you're ministering to people and you're talking to them and engaging them on a heart level, how can we not wear that, you know, and, to reconnect with the power source, I think is absolutely the way to go.
Yeah. Reconnecting. And I think that like refreshment that comes from it. Cause at first when you're saying like, oh, what will it be like? Will it be challenging? I'm like, gosh, yeah, that's your desolation chamber in some ways. But then even how
deprivation.
God or deprivation,
desolation chamber,
it deprivation.
Could be, yeah. It could be similar,
but even in that of how, yeah, God does promise us rest and how he'll, like even Psalm 23, where he talks about refreshing or restoring our souls. Like, I wonder what that will look like as you step into desolation.
Me too. I wonder, like, day two, like how it's going to, when I wake up and I'm like, okay, what now? And I'm wondering, you know, how that's going to go. But I know coming out of that the rest that hopefully I will experience is going to be worth whatever it is. So
yeah,
I'll report back, everybody. This is one of my, my first ventures out into something as dramatic as this is as Eremos as I have gotten.
Mm.
So we'll see how that goes. He also says it's different than loneliness and isolation.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is really important, because I think maybe one big reason why people don't engage in silence and solitude is because of those two things. How is it different? Like, isolation, loneliness. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. There was a quote that Kevin had where he said, loneliness is inner emptiness and solitude is inner fulfillment. And even the difference between loneliness and solitude, he even said, like, loneliness and isolation are usually not voluntary things, but solitude is. And I love what he said about, instead of feasting on others, we go to feasting on God.
Yeah.
Because I think even when I'm lonely, like, I want to go and be around people.
Yeah.
Or, like, feast on the approval or the attention or the validation from other people. My first thought is not, I'm going to go get that from God, which there's rewiring that needs to happen there.
Yeah.
But I find usually that when I'm feasting on other people to kind of address that loneliness, it doesn't help my soul rest the same way as when I do hear those things from God. Or sometimes it's silence with him. But I think even, like, thinking back to that passage of Jesus, like, before he was sent into the wilderness, where God said, this is my son with whom I'm well pleased.
Yeah.
And even just accepting that pleasure and validation, even if it's not audible the same way that it is from people in my life. I think solitude, you have to choose it. Yeah. It's voluntary. Loneliness, you can't choose. But there is that inner fulfillment versus emptiness, I think.
Yeah. It's an intentional disconnect.
Yeah.
From what's happening right now. Like, it's an intentional disconnect from the noise and the chaos. And it's saying, I am going to retreat into solitude, into silence. It's not thrust upon me. It's not something that, I don't know how this happened, or I isolated myself to a point where I'm lonely. It's an intentional forming, unplugging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think you find the balance between finding that solitude with God, but also not becoming, I think Kevin used the word, like, recluse, not using it as an excuse to, like, hole up and be by yourself. But how do we find the balance, do you think, between choosing solitude and engaging with people, or disengaging and disengaging appropriately?
Yeah, I think it's the heart behind it. I think, why are you separating yourself from the crowd, so to speak?
Yeah.
Because certainly there is an unhealthy isolation that, that we can be prone to, you know, especially when you get depressed and, you know, that kind of thing. It's really, really, you know, everything in you is telling you isolate, you know, keep to yourself, keep it locked in.
Yeah.
Because when you're in so much pain, going to a place where you're vulnerable with people is the last place you want to be. So you isolate and you go off to yourself and you become a recluse. And I think there's an unhealthy piece of that where you can get stuck there. And our independence, you know, the whole thing, the American independence, the American way of, like, we need to do it on our own. You know, I want to be the wilderness, you know, like how we idolize cowboys, you know, riding in the middle of the desert on their horse, you know, just with them and the cattle, you know? And I feel like, so that can really walk an unhealthy line. So I think really it is the heart. Am I doing this intentionally to connect with the creator of the universe, or am I doing this to isolate myself and protect myself from other people so that, you know, and I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you're right. There's a tension there, because sometimes there is good reason to disconnect yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't really answer your question.
No, I think you did. And I think something you said towards the end, like, what is the heart and why are we doing this? And I think even after that, it's like, when we come back and engage with people, what is the fruit of it in some ways? Like, are we just as, like, crabby and cranky as before, or are we starting to, I think Kevin worded it as, like, even beginning to see, like, some of the the fruits of the Spirit? Like, are we growing in patience? And again, I don't think that happens after one, like 1 hour away in silence. I'm not going to come back and be like the most respectful, honoring daughter to my mom. But I think it will grow over time as the Spirit works in those areas. But if my time in silence is just to get that time for myself and just to be away,
yeah,
then I guess it would be kind of evident when I come back of, okay, I'm still the same.
Yeah. You said something, and I'd like to actually close with this, but you had mentioned, was it a quote or something that Kevin said that I really want you to revisit? Cause I thought it was profound.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way how it was close to the ending of Kevin's message where he said, we have an infatuation with celebrities that we as a church often attach ourselves to someone else's spirituality, a podcast, a preacher, a pastor, or a friend. But what is good is when we own our faith in a way where we experience God's presence firsthand. And that often means that we step out in a hard way. But when we do, it's to commune with God for ourselves and experience Him.
That's really good. Yeah, it's... And I think sometimes when you have those... you know, where we attach our faith to somebody, I think sometimes it starts in a really, with like a really good intention.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, for example, like our parents, both you and I, our parents gave us our faith, but there has to be a point in which the faith comes yours.
Yeah.
Where you go out and you say, okay, what do I believe?
Yeah.
Do I actually believe this? Would I go, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I have to think about that with people that serve on the team. You know, if someone wants to come and play an instrument, but that's the only time they ever connect, is their faith or their church experience tied to what they do for the church, or is it tied out of connecting with God? You know, so I think that's a very real thing that I think all of us, those of us listening to, should really consider as we go on this journey, as we do these hard things and we go and find our eremos and we figure out what it means to be before the Lord, vulnerable and quiet and not speaking, that this is that beautiful process of cleaving from whatever you may be attached to and having your own relationship with the God of the universe. So where can we send people as we're practicing this together? We keep talking about it. What's the next step for somebody if they want to continue to try to practice this together as well as on their own?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing with silence and solitude, we can keep talking about it or learning about it or reading it, but it does take that hard step of actually stepping into it and practicing it. And that's part of what the habit cards that Kevin was holding up toward the end of the message that were passed out, and they're also online at the cpc.org/rule under resources. But there's two sides to it. There's like a starting practice and a stretch practice. So if you've practiced silence before and that's already part of your rhythm, there is another practice of maybe ways you can incorporate that even more.
Like a deprivation chamber?
No.
Do we have one of those?
We don't. Not yet.
I think we should buy one.
Really?
Continue.
I'll continue. But yeah, it's just simple, 5 or 6 simple steps of how to engage with God in silence. Whether it's something you've done before or something you haven't, I think those steps are just super practical, as in picking a time and place and clearing distractions and what to do when distractions arise.
They find that if they want to see the... Were you about to say that?
No, I wasn't.
Where can they find those 5 or 6 steps?
Yeah, so they're on the habit cards under the resources tab, both on the app and on the website. And we also have some available to pick up here at church as well. And then also another space where we're actually going to practice that together in addition to community groups is the practice labs, which are coming up starting on October 30th.
Yes. I'm so excited for those.
Yeah, I am too. What are you most excited about practice labs, Brandon?
I just feel like when we engage this stuff together, it becomes more and more real. You know, it's easy to just kind of get busy on your own. But when you're doing it together, there's an accountability to it. And there's also an encouragement, you know, like,
yeah,
oh, you struggle with that too, you know, like just knowing the little bit we've been testing some of this out as a staff and just sitting across from someone else, being like, how did this go for you? And they're like, oh man, well, this is what I did. And these were helpful tips that I do. And like, oh, I want to try that. Like,
yeah,
doing this together, I think is like a major key to making this stick because, you know, I mean, I think we're just meant to do things together like that. I think it helps us fortify what we believe.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, we are really hoping that you will join us if you feel ready. Join us on this journey. We have some opportunities for you to get involved, and until then, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.